Yes, sorry.
We have 10 seconds.
Yes.
You'll find out within this week, you believe, who exactly won, if Castillo maintains his lead.
Yes.
Well, Carlos León Moya, we want to thank you so much for being with us, political scientist speaking to us from Lima, Peru. And special thanks to Sadie Lutmer. That does it for our show. Tomorrow we'll look at a new film that's premiering at the Tribeca Film Festival. It's called Takeover, about the Young Lords. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock. It's Tuesday. You know what that means. Exciting edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, I'm over here. Are you there?
I'm here. I'm over here. I feel bad because I lied. You know, the show hasn't even begun. I've already lied to the listeners. I said it was Tuesday, Well, it might be when you're listening to this, but it's not Tuesday when we're saying this. It's actually Monday. Yeah. And why? Why do you ask? Are we lying? Well, okay, we're lying just because it would get confusing if we didn't, right?
Now you're being honest, though.
I try.
Because you're explaining the whole thing.
I'm trying to be, you know, like glass house or whatever.
Well, go ahead. Yeah.
So we're recording the show in advance because it's easier for us to not have to do it on Tuesday or today, right now, because I'm having a medical procedure Tuesday morning, and I'm not sure what kind of shape I'm going to be in. And showtime. It's interesting because right now, you know, I'm kind of stressing about it. It hasn't happened yet. So I get to look forward going under general anesthesia. Yeah, I've never done that. I thought I had done that before when I had a colonoscopy. But apparently that's a different kind of drug. That they call it like a twilight drug. But I don't know what the difference is, because it sure knocks you out, and then you wake up and you don't know what happened and everything is done. And that's how they describe general anesthesia, so I'm hoping it's the same thing. But, you know, you torture yourself thinking about these things that they've devised. But it's very common, happens all the time. And and I should probably say, in case people are interested, this is for treatment for kidney stones, which are a lot of fun. I recommend them to anybody. But it's gotten to the point where they're going to actually... It's amazing what they can do. They're going to go inside with like a lightsaber or something. This is how they explain it to me. It's a laser, laser beam that they're going to use to break things up all along the way. And they're going to have this, I don't know what they're going to do. You know what? I kind of like to learn what they're going to do after they do it, rather than think about it as I try to fall asleep tonight, which I don't think I'll be able to do. And I hope that doesn't affect general anesthesia so much if you don't fall asleep the night before. Like, are you super tired and you don't wake up quickly enough when they try to bring you out and they panic? And you can see, it's been torture. And the funny thing is, this was supposed to happen last week. But the reason it didn't happen last week was because of all this miscommunication that seems to follow me around wherever I go. Before you get a procedure like this, you have to be cleared medically, which means you have to go in and get an EKG and have blood work. Okay, simple enough. So the Friday before Memorial Day, it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I had an appointment to go in and have this done. And while I'm there, they asked me, so who's going to clear this? And I know my procedure was scheduled for the next Tuesday afterwards. And I said, I had no idea. I thought you were going to clear. I thought that's what this is. And they said, oh, no, you have to have your doctor clear this. And I said, well, that's great. Somebody told me this now. 3 o'clock on a Friday before a holiday weekend. I don't think I'm going to be able to find my doctor before Tuesday. And I was right, wasn't able to, so they had to postpone the whole thing. But, you know, the positive thing, there's actually two positive things that occurred because of that. Number one, I had to have a COVID test before all of this began. I've never had a COVID test before. I had the antibody test before I got the vaccine, and that was fine, didn't show any evidence of COVID. And then I had my first COVID test where they stick the thing up your nose. I was dreading that. I was really... trepidatious about having that happen because of the way people described it. They say, yeah, they put this swab and it goes into your brain. And I think, oh, my God, I don't want that to happen. It wasn't anything like that. It was so quick and so easy. It was nothing to fret about. So thank you very much, all those people who made me dread that. Anyway, so I had that. But it was after I had that that they sprung this on me. They said, oh, and you have to isolate now until your procedure. So I learned right then on that Friday afternoon that I had to not go out at all during Memorial Day. The whole weekend I had to stay inside. Yeah, thanks a lot. Well, it turns out because of the miscommunication and the fact that I had to postpone it, that no longer applied. So I was able to enjoy all the rain that happened on Memorial Day weekend. But I had to do the same thing again the week afterwards. Had to get another COVID test. That one came back negative, but I'm an expert at it now. I know what it's like, and I did all the other stuff, and the doctor signed off on it, so I'm all set to go. The other interesting thing that happened as a result, they sent me a financial statement. Now, you know, insurance is okay. It's not bad for all the things that I've had to go through recently just to set this up. But they sent me this, or the hospital that's doing this sent me a notice saying that I would be liable for about $3,600. And you know, of course, you know, you're shocked when you see something like that. $3,600. Oh my God! It is a procedure, and I know there's some liability there, and I haven't come anywhere close to my deductible, my insurance. So yeah, I guess it's not that unreasonable. But then if you look at the breakdown, you see that it's $3,600, but the total amount of fees, is something like $38,000. Yeah, and insurance covers about $35,000, but they don't cover it because I haven't reached my deductible yet. So there's some kind of, I don't know what's going on here. What do you think, Kyle? Do you think it actually costs $38,000, or does it cost close to $4,000? Which is more realistic?
I have no idea. I think that you wouldn't be able to see that, but they may have some scheme where they put it into a batch of other patients that are also getting procedures and things that would be billed the same way. I don't know. I don't know anything about how it works, and that's part of the problem is there isn't a lot of transparency.
Here's the thing. As soon as I saw that, oh, wow, it's $38,000, I was happy to pay the $3,600. And I think that's part of the way insurance works. They say, oh, you know, you could have been paying this amount, but now we're just asking you to pay this. Whatever. But here's what happened. When they postponed it a week, obviously that didn't take place. So those numbers were null and void. I got another notice the week afterwards, and the numbers were totally different. Instead of $3,600, it's now $2,900. And the total cost, instead of $38,000, is now $29,000. It's like surge pricing, you know, with Uber or something. I guess holiday weekend, maybe it costs more. I don't know. It's very weird. If anybody understands this, please let us know. otw@2600.com. It's fascinating to me. I just like to know how systems work.
Maybe they got a better price on supplies, or maybe it was unrelated to a market thing. Maybe it was just they refined some of the details of your particular procedure.
But look at this. They even have like a little gauge that says low and high, and a little dial that says where you wound up. So it can bob up and down depending on something, but I don't know what. So that was interesting. So I learned a lot, saved some money somehow. But yeah, I'm still looking forward to it. You know, actually, since by the time you're hearing this has already happened. I guess we can pause the show for a second if I'm even awake, because I might be completely knocked out. Maybe just a couple of minutes we can allocate just to give an update. Yeah, I guess we could do that. Here I am live on Tuesday. I survived. Okay, I got through it. Okay, but. It was surreal. It was torture. And now it hurts. It didn't hurt before, and now it hurts. So there's that. But it's supposed to hurt, apparently. I'm glad we recorded the show, Kyle, because I don't think I could have done it.
Well, I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad I'm here, too. I'm going to try to fall asleep.
Behind us, yeah. You should have some of that soup, maybe.
Yeah, it's not pleasant right now, but I did the right thing, and I'm glad that I got through it. But as I predicted, didn't fall asleep last night, so it was a very stressful day. But you gotta take care of things, you know. It's important.
Namely, yourselves.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So that's the update. Okay. Hope you're happy. Okay. Well, then let's move on with the rest of our show. And we'll see how things go in future episodes too. What's new with you, Kyle? I've pretty much dominated with what's new with me.
Yeah, you said it.
As of
what
yesterday.
Did I have on my mind? I didn't realize there was this topic. I wish I was more studied on it, but I'm not a doctor, and this isn't a medical show. So
it's turning into one.
Yeah, I know that medically, the state of New York is doing really well as far as COVID declines and
Controversial. So you're saying that it's good that people take the vaccine and that all
No,
you got to be fair here. All the precautionary things with the masks and the distance, that actually worked. But if you say that, then you're like a quamaquan.
Oh, for crying out loud.
No, you can't. You got to give the other side. You know,
I'm just trying to segue into
something
relatable.
What about the pro-COVID people? Come on.
No, nothing. I don't want to know what about them. Thank God, you're getting me all stressed out. I'm going to need a procedure now.
I bought 500 stickers that say I got my COVID vaccine. I'm going to stick them on people who tell me they've gotten it. I'm going to believe them. I'm not going to ask for evidence. Because if you're talking to me face-to-face, I'm going to assume you're telling me the truth. So, and I assume you don't mind if I slap something onto your chest. But I think, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of here. There's nothing to be quiet about. It's, you know, we know that COVID exists. We see what it did, and we know that the vaccine is working. Do we know everything? No, we don't know everything. No one knows everything. That's why it's so easy to ridicule people and say, oh, look, you said this one day, and you said this the other day. That means you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, genius, did you? What did you say that day? I'm curious just how much you learned. Obviously, not much. So, you know, don't fall for that. So a lot of that going on, and it's really ridiculous. We have a situation here that affects the entire world. It's not limited to your narrow political beliefs. It affects the human race. And, boy, is history going to look in a bad way upon this viewpoint that I don't want to get into it. You're right.
Well, it's getting ready to be a nice warm summer.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming up later this month. So people are out and about and enjoying this heat wave. We had a bit of a heat wave the last few days, and wow, just staying cool has been an incredible challenge.
It has.
There's droughts in the West, I hear. That's been all in the headlines today. I'm just, you know, fixing things, getting along, by and by. I just, I putter.
Yeah.
I putter around.
You are amazing as far as getting things to work that seem hopeless. Just there are a couple of things that we just couldn't seem to figure out. I think that we have a device called a Kodi that just would not accept the network settings that we had. And
you know what I learned about that? It's a read-only operating system.
Okay.
It's fascinating, and that's what makes it really really small.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe someone should write something about it, and then there'd be a little bit more information.
Yeah. There's like three different projects, and you have to get into this whole world. But all it really does is allow you to watch different things on your TV, which
TVs doesn't seem like much at all.
Yeah, they've been sort of structured away from you being able to do kind of whatever you want. So yeah, this was a cool alternative. But we were having such trouble, and what we figured out is it's just a weird thing of menus.
And then
typing certain things and then getting it to display right. I don't want to get into the whole details.
No, where do you put the backslash? How many backslashes
do you put in? Yeah. And so the nuances we had to kind of re-remember to get it to behave and do what we wanted with our thumb drive of movies. And this really helps all our, you know, video watching and updates, which we'll be bringing more cinema from the year that was down the road. And we're studying up for all of those releases and so forth. But we can't know. I don't think it. No. Whoa. Stop it.
Stop that.
Throw the blanket on it.
Who the hell did that? We weren't ready for that. We haven't even seen the film this week.
That was really close.
You know, this is what we skipped the Monday's production meeting because we're doing the show on Monday, and this is the kind of thing that happens. No, that was wrong. We're going to talk about this. When can we talk about it? Maybe Wednesday.
Did you see how close that thing got to my foot?
Yeah.
It almost rolled over my foot. I was not ready for that.
This is why you need a full 7 days, you know, separation. Otherwise, it just gets really dangerous. All right, so
we fixed some other things.
We fixed a lot of things.
It's things work, mm-hmm, then mm-hmm. they break again, and then we fix other things.
Yeah.
But that's the world, and...
Hopefully that's the mentality of the guy that's going to be probing around inside me tomorrow. It's like, I can do this. I don't know how it works, but I'm going to figure it out. You know, that kind of perseverance, that's what made this country great.
I'm sure he's a straight shooter. it's all about practice. And
yeah, and he's going to practice on me, I know.
No, and he's probably done it at least once or twice before, so you're probably going to be fine. We'll go with what the update was, anyway, you got some stories? What are we doing?
Well, yeah, I mean, these aren't very happy stories, but what did you expect? I don't know what it is. Apparently the truth just doesn't matter anymore, but there is this contingent of young Republicans that are rising in the ranks. Like this Republican House candidate from Wisconsin said he's appalled by the violence he witnessed on January 6th, but he didn't disagree with the effort to overturn the presidential election results that very same night. In Michigan, a woman known as the MAGA Bride, after photos of her Donald J. Trump-themed wedding dress went viral, is running for Congress, while falsely claiming it's highly probable the former president carried her state and won re-election. In Washington State, your state, Kyle, the Republican nominee for governor last year is making a bid for Congress, months after finally dropping a lawsuit challenging his 2020 defeat, a contest he lost by 500,000 votes. Numbers don't mean anything anymore. It's your reality or it's fiction. Across the country, a rising class of Republican challengers has embraced the fiction that the 2020 election was illegitimate, marred by fraud and inconsistencies, aggressively pushing Mr. Trump's baseless claims that he was robbed of re-election. These candidates represent the next generation of aspiring GOP leaders who would bring to Congress the real possibility that the party's assault on the legitimacy of elections, a bedrock principle of American democracy, could continue through the 2024 contests. I mean, it's now June, and it's still going. In fact, it's gaining strength, if anything, amongst these people who simply do not believe the truth. And you see, this is from the New York Times. They were quite clear in saying things like baseless claims, falsely claiming, things like that. These are lies, and it is not an opinion to say they are lies when they are lies. So that's why you're seeing all kinds of journalistic outlets not hedging at all and saying, he's lying. This is not the truth. Evidence shows otherwise. And it's important to listen because the facts matter. I mean, how do we even argue this? It's provable. It has been proven. Just like with the virus, there are things that you can determine to be factual and things you can determine to be theoretical and false. So, to continue to follow this, I mean, if people really don't care about facts anymore, then all bets are off as to what happens, you know? It's something that I assumed we'd be past by now, but we're still stuck. And as a result, things aren't getting done that should be getting done, and we're all going to be suffering for it. And God help us if these people gain control somehow. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but I've been surprised before, and if facts don't matter to people, then anything's possible.
This is what the party's running on, though.
And I know.
This is the people that are not in jail, or no, that were in jail and got out, that didn't end up in jail after January 6th, or that believe the people that stormed the Capitol and ended up on the wrong side of the law. And this grand lie that is being perpetuated still by the former president who refuses to concede the election. So, to my mind, they're bored and everywhere and stirring things up, just as we'd seen in Arizona with this phony recount.
Oh my God!
Circus, sideshow, freak show.
Yeah, where do you think that's going to go? I mean, they could just basically make up anything they want at this point.
They want to be able to say it, even though they know it's a lie collectively.
Yeah, we know what they want. We know what they want to do, but do you think they're actually going to do this?
Yeah, it's the parties.
I've heard all kinds of security issues as far as the ballots and supervision and things like that. So
no one in their party is stopping it, though.
Mm-hmm.
No one's saying, hey, hello, this is completely made up.
But that's what fear does to people.
Yeah.
I mean, you see that in totalitarian regimes. Look at Belarus. What's happening there? You see the guy who got yanked off the plane, and he has been brought to Minsk to face trial. And I don't know if we talked about this, but the plane that was flying to Lithuania was forced down, and to great protest from Western powers, and rightfully so too. And now video has emerged of him basically confessing, singing the praises of the dictator Lukashenko. Now, I don't begrudge him for doing this. I don't know how I would react under torture. None of us do. And we cannot say that we would be able to stand tall and just rebut all these lies that we're forced to repeat. But this is what people do in those kinds of situations. Now, are people being tortured? No, they're not being... I don't think they're being tortured here.
Well, we don't know the conditions that he's in.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about here. I'm back in the States now. Why are people reacting the same way here? It's fear on a different level. Fear of losing your power.
Well, in the leadership case, a strong argument has been made that the fear of reprisal against politicians.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, going against the wishes of your district, even if it means doing the constitutional thing.
Interesting.
In other words, people with security details and stuff, they fear their own electorate or fear running afoul of powerful peers like the former president and his entourage.
Well, let's bring that local then. We've got Lee Zeldin, our local representative, who does everything Trump says and is about as fascist as they come. You're saying he's afraid of the people right here in Suffolk County, the people around us.
That's a good scenario, yeah.
It's not a good scenario, but yeah, it might be an accurate scenario.
He might not ever admit it.
Well, no, of course, they never admit it.
But I think deep down, he knows, yeah, that's the point I think I'm making. And there's been a strong argument for that, I think, in some of these newly released, I don't know, it's in the news.
These people that Zeldin is supposedly afraid of, and you know what? Is he afraid of them, or is he just one of them? You know, it's really hard to say. I think he's just a coward from top to bottom. But those people that he's allegedly afraid of, are they the majority? Or are they just a loud minority? I think it's the latter. I think most people are, even most Republicans, are reasonable people. But to get caught up in all of this and to have the loudest voices dominate and lead, that's when you get into trouble. And that is, if you look at every fascist regime, totalitarian regime in the past, that's pretty much how it goes. The majority of the people just want to live their lives, but they will stand up and support something that will keep them alive or keep them from starving in their eyes. And that's what fear does. That's the motivation of fear. I just can't believe it's happening here. You know, it's happening all over the country. And so you have the situation where lies basically become truth. It's so Orwellian. And then, okay, you have the situation of Joe Manchin. You know, the Democratic senator, air quotes, lots of air quotes.
Yeah, I
Democratic
don't know. Is
senator,
he really a Democrat?
You got to prove it to me.
Yeah, I want to see some evidence of that.
Democratic senator from West Virginia. Who basically has vowed to stand with the Republicans on the voter rights bill that is opposing it, vowed to stand with the Republicans on keeping the filibuster from being overturned. And basically, with this action, these actions, keeping the Biden agenda from taking off in any form. Because that is how our system works. It didn't used to work this way. It used to be that a majority vote in the Senate was all you needed. But now, you still need the majority vote, but in order to even begin debate on something, you have to have the 60-vote threshold. It could be overturned in a single vote. But because Democrats don't have real Democrats on their side, they're kind of powerless right now, and it's really disgusting and sad. And there's been a lot of blowback to this. Representative Jamal Bowman on Monday, which was yesterday, it's today as we're reading it, said that Senator Joe Manchin has become the new Mitch McConnell, denouncing the West Virginia Democrat for maintaining his support of the legislative filibuster while opposing his party's expansive election and ethics reform bill. In an interview on CNN, Bowman, who is a Democrat from New York, or is it Bowman? I'm not really sure, invoked past comments by McConnell that cast the Republican Senate leader as a partisan obstructionist to the agendas of former President Barack Obama and President Joe Biden. Now, Bowman says, Joe Manchin is doing everything in his power to stop democracy and to stop our work for the people, the work that the people sent us here to do. And, you know, it's hard to argue this because, you know, at best you could say that Manchin is being idealistic and saying that, you know, we can get people to work together. But the fact of the matter is they're not. The reason that the voting rights bill is needed is because of all the anti-voting bills that are being passed into law in states throughout the country that literally will make it harder for people of color to vote and will steal elections. It's almost written on them. We're going to steal the elections by making it impossible for certain people to vote while making it easy for other people to vote. And we're just going to see this whole thing happen. That's why we need something to protect us against that. And his view is that because Republicans don't support it, it would be wrong for Democrats to just do it anyway. You know, they don't seem to have that trouble when they're passing their bills all throughout the country and changing democracy, obliterating democracy. At some point, the being idealistic has to become the wrong choice because you're not dealing with another side that wants to meet you halfway or even wants to meet you at all.
What's unfortunate, I think, is he doesn't see, Joe Manchin doesn't see, I think, what's going on in other states and the impact his stubbornness on this is having. We're hearing, for instance, in Texas, that there's not much, you know, there's not much other, many more options, you know, other recourse. They've done as much as they can, and the legislatures that want to do this around the country in every state are doing it if they can, if there's enough control and will. So why is it that his idealism or wish for how this ought to go, why is that somehow necessarily override real emergencies other politicians are seeing? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you should hear that. That's part of your job is as a national representative.
Yeah, it's
or a senator.
It's shameful, but you know he's not the only one too. There are other quote unquote moderate Democrats that aren't willing to completely back the moves that Biden is trying to make. And we have to think on a political level here. Democrats may, quote-unquote, control the Senate, but they don't really. And I keep hearing all this talk about how Republicans want to reclaim the Senate. I'm hearing it all the time. And you keep talking points up enough, it becomes the narrative. I'm not hearing enough from Democrats saying strengthen the Senate, meaning get more Democrats on board so it's not just 50-50. Maybe 55-45, you know, something like that. It certainly is doable, but you got to get the passion going. And I'm not seeing much in the way of passion. I'm seeing a lot of hand-wringing. I'm seeing a lot of people, you know, screaming to the heavens. And I'm one of them right now, but, you know, we have to think politically. We have to think, okay, so how do we get past this? How do we, you know, first of all, Joe Manchin can't always just be hurting the Democrats. The Democrats have to hurt him, too, at some point. And I don't mean that in a necessarily a bad way. That's how politics is, give and take. So Democrats have to say, you're going to get this if you support us. If you don't support us, you're not going to get this. There's not enough of that. I don't know what they're afraid of, because how could it get any worse? So there needs to be that. Democrats have to become strong, unified, and not be attacking each other, no matter how much we want to do that. And think for the future, so that this doesn't become an issue. Maybe this is a roadblock. It shouldn't be a barrier. It shouldn't be something that stops forward motion permanently. It can. It can if we let it, but it doesn't have to. And as you can see, the other side that doesn't believe in truth, I can't believe that is really what I'm saying here, but it's true, they're willing to pick up the ball. They're willing to get their way, and they don't tolerate dissent. You saw it happen to Liz Cheney. So even when it's a complete fabrication, a complete lie, you're expected to stand up, you're expected to repeat the lie, and if you don't, you will pay a penalty. The Democrats don't do it that way. So that's why you have a Joe Manchin that is making things a royal pain in the ass for everybody.
I think people thought the national priorities would have a little bit more activity, and now we have to focus on this stuff a lot more because it has been stopped for this very reason. So there's been maybe some course correction, realizing that we have to think like the worst, most vindictive, horrible losers there are.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you resist the sort of fight they're putting up while we thought we could get some things done for, like, what was it, 3 weeks maybe?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well,
a couple months in the winter.
Let's also focus on good things, because good things are happening, and we're back in the climate accord. Those oil leases were canceled. There are things that are happening, and just the overall mood is better. So let's not minimize that, and let's try and keep working to get more, because there's so much we can accomplish, so much we can do. So much potential. Now, here's something interesting that happened today, Monday. Vice President Kamala Harris went to Guatemala. Now, I'm reading a New York Post story, so take that for whatever it's worth. But there are pictures of this, so it's kind of interesting. They say she was greeted Monday by protesters in Guatemala, telling her Trump won and go home, as the country's president blamed President Biden for the migrant crisis. Yeah, a large sign near the Central American country's presidential palace read, Kamala, Trump won. Kamala, mind your own business. Kamala, go home. Another poster, Guatemala is pro-life. What do you think's going on there? Pro-Trump people in Guatemala? Guatemala Trumpers? Another sign that appears to have been hoisted by activists, that's what the Post calls them, activists, onto a tall billboard along the roadway says, Kamala, it's interesting, they all do it the same way, too. Kamala, they all say it that way. Stop funding criminals. I'm not sure what they're referring to there. Well, the president of Guatemala, Alejandro Jamate, I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but that's the name. He is a former director of the Guatemalan penitentiary system. And I don't know if that qualifies you to be president, but it got him elected, apparently.
So, daycare?
Let's just skip over to his political views. Jamate has vowed to bring back the death penalty and pledged to crush violent gangs, fight poverty to stop migration and end disgusting corruption. He is against same-sex marriage and abortion and supports using the military for civilian security. Starting to make a bit more sense now. During his visit to Israel in December of 2019, he pledged to have Hezbollah declared a terrorist organization, declaring that the friends of Israel are the friends of Guatemala and the enemies of Israel are our enemies. At the same time, he called the Venezuelan government a dictatorship and said he wanted to maintain the same diplomatic line as his predecessor, Jimmy Morales, towards Venezuela. This guy is pretty far right, so it doesn't surprise me that these kinds of signs would suddenly appear next to the presidential palace. But it gives the impression that everybody is against the Biden administration. You know, you wouldn't expect Guatemala to be pro-Trump, but this guy is, obviously, and that's how fascism works. It spreads from place to place. So
that's the one uncanny part of this is just the copycatting. Just it's so blatant. It's like one riding on the other's coattails. It's just so disgusting. They so badly want to outdo or be... I don't even know what it is. It's some weird pompous competition. But, yeah, they just are so alike in so many glaring ways.
Well, fascist regimes prop each other up.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, we have to count Israel as one of them now.
They're really palling around.
Guatemala... Brazil, the Philippines, they're all over the place. Regimes where force is used and brutality becomes the norm. And people don't seem to know any better. Now, Brazil, people are starting to know better in Brazil, and I'm happy to see this finally.
Yeah, but actually.
Bolsonaro is, he denied the virus for a very long time. Hundreds of thousands of people died, did not distribute the vaccine in a very good way at all, and now has put his country forward to host Copa, the football tournament, after Argentina said, we can't do this because of COVID. The COVID cases in Argentina are nowhere near what they are in Brazil. And yet, somehow, they agreed to have it hosted in Brazil, which is the most irresponsible thing ever. And now people are in the streets in Brazil, finally, calling for his impeachment, calling for him to get out. And that is the only thing that works, okay? That's the only way to make changes, whether it's here, whether it's Brazil, whether it's Israel, whether it's Belarus. The only way to change regimes that are undemocratic is to put yourself out there. I've been saying this for months. Surround Joe Manchin's house, or if it's a mansion, his mansion's mansion, or his office, and his office. If thousands of people were out there, day and night, making their presence known.
Hopefully West Virginians.
Well, yeah. I mean, they elected him, right? And if they honestly don't believe in infrastructure, and they don't believe in voting rights and things like that, then, you know, I don't know why they didn't elect a Republican. It doesn't make any sense to me. But I'm presuming that there are enough people out there that care about this to actually get loud and show themselves.
I think he's... It's clear he's lying. I mean, he's played it coy. He's like, you know, wanting to get along and all this, like, bipartisan crap, but... Mm-hmm. Honestly, he's full of it. It's not happening. And how much more is the entire party going to wait on his every word?
That's what I'm wondering.
With bated breath. Oh, golly, what does Joe Manchin say?
At some point.
How is him and the president, what's their, yeah.
At some point, it has to stop. All right. Terrorist Act in Canada yesterday. A 20-year-old man was charged today being Monday, with four counts of murder, one count of attempted murder, and a hit-and-run Sunday involving a pickup truck in London, Ontario, in what police say was a targeted attack on a Muslim family of five. Terrorism charges are also possible against Nathaniel Veltman, 20 years old, of London. There is evidence that this was a planned, premeditated act and that the family was targeted because of their Muslim faith. Devastating loss of four members of our community. It's not restricted to our country by any means. This ugliness happens everywhere. And Canada of late has been dealing with all kinds of nightmares from its past, but there are some nightmares in its present as well. And here's another. This hasn't been getting very much attention, at least as of right now, in U.S. news, and that's very disturbing to me. Did you hear about this story before, Kyle? Did you see it on any of the U.S.
I have no idea which one you're referring to.
Well, I'm going to hand the CBC report to you, and you can see for yourself. It's pretty disgusting.
Oh, wow. And isn't this, like, legalized in certain parts of the U.S. now?
Well,
they weren't protesting.
Okay,
so.
Let me explain. Let me explain. You can run over protesters, but you can't target them based on their religion or their race. I think that's how the law stands in some states in this country right now, actually. Okay. A little bit of, well, it's still bad news, but it had a better ending. Ever Lopez of Asheboro, North Carolina, was set to become the first member of his immediate family to graduate from high school. Instead, he was denied his diploma because he wore a Mexican flag over his graduation gown at his ceremony this past week. Until Mr. Lopez's name was called on Thursday, the graduation ceremony at Asheboro High School had played out like any other. The student's name was called, the student received a diploma holder, handshakes were exchanged, and people clapped. But when Mr. Lopez approached the center of the stage with the red, white, and green Mexican flag draped over his shoulders, he had a brief exchange with the school's principal, drawing boos from the audience. After a moment, Mr. Lopez walked off the stage, raising a fist as he returned to his seat. So he was punished for wearing a Mexican flag over his graduation gown and not given his diploma. He got his diploma days later, so that's the happy ending. But it's disgusting that this is how it played out.
Everybody gets them a couple days later. They just give you the...
Okay, that's not what happened here. He was denied... No, he's supposed to get his diploma then.
Right, he didn't get handed the holder and get to participate. He was visibly sort of cast out, right? Didn't get to walk off and, you know, after shaking hands and all that.
Right. In fact, his whole family got kicked out. The principal was seen escorting Mr. Lopez and his family out of the school after the ceremony. He and his parents can come back tomorrow, and we can talk about it, she said, like a principal.
What was the aggravating aspect of it? Was he completely covered in a flag, like you couldn't tell if he was wearing a gown at all?
He was obviously wearing a gown, but it had a decoration on the back. It wasn't a big deal
at
all.
People decorate all kinds of stuff. They have the mortar board, you know, the hats. People do all kinds. They write things on them.
I know.
And what if you're... I know I had peers in school that were from different places or had an affiliation and had flags of various kinds. I just don't understand.
We had a guy show up in his Marine outfit because he had just volunteered for the Marines. That was okay. If this person had put an American flag over their back, I'm sure that would have been okay too. But he's proud of his Mexican heritage. The fact that they're making such a big deal of it shows why it's important to display these things. The district said graduation is a milestone event, and it's grossly unfair for one individual to diminish this event by violating the dress code. This incident is not about the Mexican flag. Oh, yeah. Students were encouraged to express their identity by decorating their mortar boards, whatever those are.
That's the hat. That's what I said.
That's what it's called? Okay.
Yeah.
A number of students followed the protocol and had the Mexican flag and other representations appropriately displayed during the ceremony. Wait, they had Mexican flags on their mortar boards, too? Other students did? It's not a big deal, you know? A little bit of rebellion shouldn't result in this. For God's sake, it's literally the last thing this kid is doing in high school. Let it go.
I will say there is a you know, protocol for the robes and the ties and tassels and all this sort of thing so you can identify various levels of prestige and accomplishment, and that's taken very seriously in the academic environment, but most students, they're not going to matriculate much further and won't even be really cognizant of that anyway. And in the moment, it's like you said, a decoration. Like, I know for a fact, I had someone I went to school with who was really proud of his Korean descent. But it was not South Korea.
Oh,
and he went on and on about it all the time, and it was, like, funny, and he knew that it was kind of a little bit of antagonistic, I think, or maybe he just didn't care.
You had a North Korean in your school?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. You never told me that.
It's not, it didn't seem like something I needed to mention. But
okay.
I'm just saying if they wanted to bring a flag or wave a little one or, you know, tie one around their waist or something, would it be that big a deal? It meant something
it should,
to them.
It's
just like everything else people decorate with on those occasions. So
we're almost out of time, believe it or not, but I just want to end with some good news. 23 U.S. House members have thrown support behind a high-speed rail system that would pass through Long Island. Isn't that amazing? The North Atlantic Rail proposal. A letter from Representative Tom Suozzi, from a Democrat from Glen Cove, signed by 22 other members of the House of Representatives, urged Transportation and Infrastructure Committee Chairman Peter DeFazio, Democrat of Oregon, to advance the North Atlantic Rail proposal, which they call bold and transformative. The proposed network will underpin the continued growth and prosperity of the seven-state region for decades to come, they said. NAR will address the severe and growing highway, rail, and air congestion that is undermining the vitality of the region's innovation and technology sectors, which will be essential to America's continued global economic competitiveness in decades to come. Now, this proposal calls for the excavation of several rail tunnels in the region, including under the East River to Penn Station, through parts of Queens and Long Island, and from Port Jefferson across the Long Island Sound to Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Woo-hoo!
Trains would travel up to 200 miles per hour and get you between New York and Boston in 1 hour and 40 minutes. It takes longer to get to New York from here than it would from Boston. I think this is an amazing, assuming environmentally it works out, I think this is an amazing idea. It's great that Congress is starting to support it. Of course, Lee Zeldin, our local representative, does not support it, which tells you it's a good idea. Right there, that tells you it's good for Long Island. So let's hope that happens. It'll take a while. It'll cost a bit. But, boy, it'll propel us into the 20th century. Not quite the 21st century, but at least the 20th century. Amtrak is looking to restore service to the Gulf Coast. Remember that? That's after Katrina.
Yeah.
They stopped rail service. We even looked at some of the abandoned.
Is between Tampa and New Orleans?
I don't think went to. I don't know the exact cities. If you have the exact cities, by all means. But I don't have.
I can't remember exactly.
But
it was separated though.
Yeah, New Orleans to Mobile, Alabama, and into Florida is where it's supposed to go. I'm not exactly sure where.
Yeah, I think it's stopped.
Restoring passenger service across the Gulf Coast is one of the top two or three priorities of the new deputy administrator. President, this story is written in such a clumsy way. It's quoting someone else talking about somebody. Okay, whatever. It's a priority of Amtrak.
They got to do it.
Yeah. New U.S. railroad leader. Okay, it's not the Amtrak leader. It's a new deputy administrator of the Federal Railroad Administration who says this is a priority. How much power is that going to
have? Oh, wow. Okay, that's like a, not a cabinet. I don't know if it's a cabinet level, but it's a appointment.
Uh-huh.
In the federal government. So that's like a government mandate there.
Well, his name is Ahmed Bose. He told members of the Southern Rail Commission. We should hang out with some of these people. Southern Rail Commission.
We probably.
That he made that goal clear to the Federal Railroad staff when he arrived at his new job on January 20th. I was lucky enough to ride a part of that test run back in 2016, he said. Back in February 2016, officials traveled on an Amtrak train from New Orleans to Mobile and into Florida in a two-day trip designed to gauge interest in restoring passenger service along the Northern Gulf. They were met at cities along the way with bands, crowds, and cheers. I remember that. I'm looking forward to doing that again. He said for real this time, not calling it a test. So that's good. Amtrak has restored long-distance rail on a daily basis. They're bringing back traditional dining car, but not everywhere. They have not brought it back on routes east of the Mississippi River, where freshly prepared meals were replaced with boxed options. And that happened before the pandemic. Bad idea, bad decision. It really makes a huge difference in the whole experience to have that dining car, to have the fresh food. So I hope they come to their senses there and restore it everywhere. There's also talk about restoration of the Empire Corridor Amtrak service at the pre-COVID levels and a bunch of expansion. So good things ahead. We just have to support them. We just have to spread the word about them.
And look to the future. Look ahead.
Exactly. What a nice optimistic note to end on. And hopefully, I'm doing okay. We'll see. I guess in future weeks and on the tomorrow night show on the other station.
I might have some, like, consomme or some noodle soup or something.
OTW at 2600.com. We'll see you next week.
Good night.
Bye.